Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 748 of the podcast. And it is Saturday, the 27th of April, 2024, as I record this. In today's show, I'm talking to Dan Blank about human-centered book marketing. We discuss how you can reframe marketing and embrace it as something you might even enjoy, connecting to a person rather than an audience, finding the right platform for you, the daily work of being an author versus launch periods, marketing later books in a series, and how Dan uses Substack as the pillar of his marketing, and much more. So that's coming up in the interview section. So in publishing industry news, well, the big news this week is that the TikTok ban was signed into law in the USA, which means the owner ByteDance, which is Chinese, has 9 months to maybe a year, it could be extended, to divest the app within the USA, or it will stop being updated in the app stores and I guess will slowly die. Or they can sell it, or as they are doing, TikTok are fighting this in the courts as a breach of constitutional rights. So it might not even happen, or it might be sold and the algorithm will obviously change. But there are changes ahead. Regardless of what happens, changes are coming, as reported in The Verge, which as ever I'll link to in the show notes, but also lots of other places have been reporting on this. So of course this is in the USA, but if that happens, I'm sure here in the UK and a lot of other countries are thinking about it. India already banned TikTok, so there are changes afoot. But this is true of everything. You know from listening to this show, changes are always, always happening. Nothing stays the same for very long. So whatever platform you choose, and Dan and I talk about some other ones in today's episode, make sure you are always driving people to your email list and back that email list up. And in fact, even as Dan talks about using Substack, he backs up that email list. So if things change at Substack, you can move elsewhere. It is so important not to be dependent on these third-party tools, because things will change. And in fact, the longer you are in this industry, the more you know that things are going to change. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that, but I don't think, if you're doing incredibly well on TikTok, then by all means, carry on. Just make sure you are getting your customer details so that you can pivot as you need to. And even if TikTok doesn't change, an author's sales don't just go up and to the right forever. Waves of change that impacts sales, and taste change and books change. And so yeah, just make sure you can always reach your audience. Also this week, doing the rounds, is an article from Elle Griffin titled "No One Buys Books." And if you are at all on social media, you would have seen this going around. Now, Elle has been on this show before talking about using Substack and releasing books in different ways. And this article really blew up. She recapped aspects of the 2022 Department of Justice case against Penguin Random House, which prevented them from buying Simon & Schuster, which eventually sold to a venture capital company. And lots of things came out as part of the testimony that we all talked about at the time. I mean, there were loads and loads of things going around because some of these CEOs said things that had never been said out loud before, at least in public. Now, Elle includes aspects of that in her article, for example, like the outliers, only the outliers sell more than 100,000 copies, that big advances go to celebrities or those with big platforms. She quotes Marcus Dole, CEO of Penguin Random House, who said the top 4% of titles drive 60% of profitability, and around half the books we publish make a profit of some kind. Obviously, meaning around half do not make a profit. Plus, it's all about the backlist, how Amazon is the biggest threat to the industry, and how authors are becoming more independent. So I read it, and I mean, it It takes aspects that came out during that case and talks about it. But lots of people got mad. A lot of people wrote commentary about her piece. A lot of comments. I mean, super, super discussions there. People with their different attitudes. I've seen things in different Facebook groups. So yeah, if you come across that, I thought I'd just share a few of the responses. Kathleen Schmidt at Publishing Confidential, which I think is, obviously she is traditional publishing, but she writes some really good stuff. She wrote, "Please stop bashing book publishing," saying that Elle's piece was misinformed and missing a lot of context. She goes into what publishers do for authors and says, "Most publishing staff work hard every day with the resources they have. Sometimes those resources are the bare minimum, which is an ongoing problem in the industry. While it is true that the amount of marketing and publicity publishers invest in books varies, it is also true that authors must be active participants in their book promotion. That will not change, because the most effective way for authors to reach readers is through building their audience." So it was kind of funny because on one hand, she was saying all this stuff about what publishers do, but then she also saying you still have to do marketing, which, of course, is what a lot of the complaints from authors is about. Jane Friedman commented on the hot sheet saying, "Here's what's undeniably true. Most books don't sell in significant numbers. Many books don't earn out their advance. The majority of authors, at least early in their careers, cannot survive on book advances or book sales alone. This has been the case throughout history. Big publishers pay high advances to celebrities, politicians, etc. Publishers do not adequately support the titles they publish with marketing and promotion. And authors and smaller publishers have been gaining in market share since at least 2010. This is a good thing, and it is partly due to Amazon, ebooks, and print-on-demand technology. But big publishers aren't going anywhere, and they're starting to partner in new ways with authors, self-publishing authors especially, and they remain powerful in the market. But in fact, book sales look healthier now than they did 5 years ago. There's certainly a conversation to be had about publishing's business model and how big five publishers must adapt or how the industry must evolve." And that was in hotsheetpub.com, which is Jane's paid newsletter, which is great. Seth Godin also wrote about it. He said, "Books sell, but book doesn't. The odds of a particular book selling a lot of copies are close to zero." And he includes a whole load of charts and maths and other things and concludes, "Books matter. Making them is a combination of craft and insight. Publishing them is a generous act of faith. Adding to the corpus of shared knowledge is important. Books change the culture when people act on them, even if they don't sell many copies. And sometimes the backlist surprises the accountants. But the economics of new books have nothing to do with any of these benefits. Scarcity made the book publishing world work as a business, and scarcity is gone. Write a book because you can, and because it might make a difference. But don't listen to your publisher's suggestions simply to sell more copies. You probably won't." So I think there's so many interesting things that come up, and of course everyone has their perspective. I like Seth's perspective because he's written like lot of books. He's also been a publisher. He's done all kinds of interesting projects with books. He is a book guy. So my opinion on this is, I love books. I read books every day. I buy books pretty much every day in every format. I write books. I narrate some of my own books. I like holding books and owning books. And basically, there are millions of us around the world who are like me. Many of us are authors. Many of those people work in publishing, libraries. They're just people who love books. So books do sell. People buy books all the time, including me and probably you. But obviously, lots of books don't sell. To be honest, many of my books haven't sold many copies as ever, a bit like Marcus said. Whether it's a big publisher or it's a small publisher, some particular books make the most money and other books just don't hit at all. But I will write even if my books don't sell. And I just want to keep creating. And part of doing this podcast and having my patrons and all of that is so that I can keep creating. These statistics in the media are not going to stop me. The rise of AI won't stop me. I think probably only the grave will stop me. So if you read the negativity, if you feel the vibes online, do not let the negativity get you down, creatives. The answer to any kind of news-related misery is just go create and spend your time in the joy of writing and creating new things in the world. And we can all figure out the publishing and the marketing later on. And I know this show is about author business, but it is primarily about books. And writing, because that's what we love. So, like, literally, I couldn't care less about all of this storm and stress and all this stuff that is just raging around. We just have to cut it all out, sit down or stand up or go for a walk or whatever, and do what we love to do, which is create. So I hope that helps. As you've probably seen all of this going around, there are pros and cons of everything. We all have to decide for ourselves. But at the end, it just comes down to being people who are creative and want to write. And we cannot let any of this stop us. So in personal news, you might have noticed in your podcast feed that the Creative Pen podcast logo has changed. It is now a colourful Creative Pen. I just needed to remove my old photo. So it's basically the one that was the picture is old, and it's like a few years old now. I'm 4 or 5 years old and I look different to it. And every time I was seeing the image, I was like, I don't look like that. That's not me. And as soon as you feel like that's not me, it starts to give you some distance from whatever it is. And I was like, this is my podcast. It needs to be me. I did have some new photos, but I was just like, do you know what? I think I'm going to go with an icon again, and this is the icon that's actually on the new author blueprint as well. Of course, the logo has changed multiple times. If you have been listening a long time, when I started it in 2009, there wasn't even a logo, like we just had an RSS feed. And then over time, I've changed pictures. There's been several pictures of me. There's been several times it's been the logo. The logo has slightly changed. The branding has changed. So yeah, I mean, the podcast has been going 15 years now, and things will no doubt change if I go on for another 15 years. I'm not promising it, but this is the latest iteration. So if you were wondering, that's the reason why. We all need to reinvent ourselves. So yeah, I mean, the show's the same. I may also change the theme tune. And I did propose this in my Patreon, and people were like, no, I love the theme tune. But I'll tell you why. I don't necessarily want to. I may not. I mean, but this is why. It's quite instructive around how things change, actually. So back in 2009, when I started the show, I used a Creative Commons piece of music from Kevin MacLeod at a site called Incompetech. And I tipped Kevin, the creator at the time. But Creative Commons, I mean, there is a lot of Creative Commons music out there. But also back then, I was bootstrapping, you know, it was... There were a lot of costs associated with things, and so I was using Creative Commons. And over the years, what's happened is that site was sold and then sold again. And the latest owner has an automated intellectual property notice on YouTube. So every time this goes out on YouTube, I get a kind of breach of copyright notice in for the music. And every time I have to challenge it, and every time they release it. So it is not in breach. It has evidential, you know, it is evidentially fine. But this happens every single week. So it will happen with this one. It just happens every week. And it is automated. They can't seem to turn it off, I have asked. So if I change my music and license, get a proper license for mass media, that will stop happening. So if the music, if the theme tune changes, that is why. And I use Audio Jungle for licensing music. But I'm still trying to find the right piece, because once you've been using the same thing for 15 years, it gets quite hard to reimagine it. But I wanted to kind of tell you that because I also think it's instructive around how things change. I mean, another good example is, of course, Twitter, which became X under Elon Musk. And we all know how that has changed. I'm back on it now. I'm treating it as a brand new site. I'm trying not to think about it as how it used to be, but as how it is now. And maybe TikTok will be the same. Maybe someone will buy TikTok. I don't think it will be Elon Musk. I think he's got enough to concern himself with X, but you never know. So this is what happens when IP is bought and bought again. And of course, this happens with authors' works. Some publishers are bought or they sell themselves and other companies buy it and the IP moves. This is what happens. So it is worth thinking about. Things do not stay the same. So that's happening. I'm also in finishing energy on Spear of Destiny. This week I worked with my book designer, Jane, at JD Smith Design, and on the interior formatting. So the special edition and also the covers and all of that. So the special edition will have silver foil on the flyleaf cover and also the interior cover, as well as colour photos from my book research and a black ribbon and head and tail bands and heavier paper and silken finish. And I've ordered the proof, so that is happening. But of course, it's a custom print with Book Vault. So It's hopefully I'll get it in the next week or so. The special edition cover will only be available in the Kickstarter, but there'll also be a paperback and a large print in the cover that will be available later everywhere else. I also got the edits back on my short story, and here is the title, nobody guessed it, De-Extinction of the Nephilim. So yes, De-Extinction of the Nephilim. I teased that last week. If you don't know, the Nephilim were the children of angels and human women, the giants of legend, and feature in the apocryphal book of Enoch. And I just thought it was a cool idea to find the bones of the Nephilim at the ancient ruins of Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, which is 11,000 years old. And then we could use de-extinction technology, or could we use it to bring them back to life? And if you aren't aware, de-extinction technology is in process. A company called Colossal is using that to try and bring back the woolly mammoth and the thylacine. So I love the story. I think it's pretty interesting, and that will be a stretch goal in the Kickstarter, and I'll also sell it in all the usual places later on. But all that admin and marketing and formatting was a bit much, to be honest. Is a lot of, this is when I start getting RSI because I'm like clicking things and doing all of that. So I had a day out. I had an artist's date at Salisbury Cathedral. It's only about an hour from me. It is a Gothic cathedral, and I visited the stonemason's yard, and the pictures are on Instagram and Facebook at JF Penn Author. So this is the official start of my research for the Gothic Cathedral project, and I'm calling it a project because I don't know what it'll turn into, but it's going to take some time. If you don't know about the artist date, it's a term coined by Julia Cameron in The Artist's Way, and it's time alone doing something to fill your creative well. Now, it doesn't have to be research. It can just be a trip or go to a museum or a walk or like a pottery class, anything that fills you up. And right now, I am pretty empty having done the book and then the short story. So I was in a bit of a mood earlier in the week, and I was like, why do I just feel so down and so tired and all of that? And then I was like, oh yeah, I just finished a book and a short story. And the energy that comes from kind of getting the book done drops off once you finish it, obviously, and then you need to fill yourself. So I just wanted to remind you, if you're someone and you're like, oh, why do I feel so empty? Well, you might have just given everything to your book. And yes, writing fiction, I actually find writing fiction much more tiring than writing nonfiction. And so that's good to keep in mind. So thanks for all your emails and comments and photos this week. There were so many in response to the interview with Thorn, T. Thorn Coyle, about mid-list indie author mindset. It clearly resonated with so many of you, and I guess we're all mid-list indie authors. So that is fantastic. Oh, so I can only read a few of these because there were so many, which is amazing. I loved reading them all, and I hopefully replied to everything. Jim said, "Wow, Thorn, that interview was so helpful. The reframing of how they do marketing and approach writing as what they are called to write, so helpful for me." Nikki Morrock on X said, "Excellent interview. I saved this episode to come back to you again. My goal as a writer isn't fame, it's freedom. And as a paranormal author still trying to find my readers, I have a new hero." Fantastic. Yes, me too. I want freedom. Freedom, not fame. So maybe I think that's what a lot of us want, right? And Julie left a comment on the show notes saying, "Loved this podcast episode. So many great takeaways, including the fact that people need wonder, comfort, pleasure and joy in their lives. I also like the reminder to embrace your weird self and that people do try to be kind." And on X, Liberty Speed or Heart said, "Listening to the show this morning as I get my day started as a rideshare driver. Darn day job." And Liberty, I just wanted to say, I use rideshare a lot, and I really love drivers. So thank you for driving, and thank you to anyone who's listening. And if you're a taxi, Uber / rideshare, whatever, I really appreciate it. And Carrie sent pictures of gravestones saying, "I took a trip to Cape Cod, Massachusetts a few weeks ago and saw some really old, by American standards, cemeteries that were fascinating." So thank you for that. You know, I always love pictures of gravestones and all the memento mori things you can find. So as ever, thank you for all your comments. Please leave a comment on the podcast show notes at thecreativepen.com or on the YouTube channel, or message me on X at thecreativepen with a double N, or email me. Send me pictures of where you're listening, joanna@thecreativepen.com. I love to hear from you. It makes this more of a conversation. So today's show is sponsored by my wonderful community at patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thanks to the 9 new patrons who've joined this week, and thanks to everyone who's been supporting for months and years. You are fantastic. If you join the community, you get access to all my backlist videos and audio covering topics on creativity and writing, tutorials and thoughts on AI, mindset, business, marketing, lots more. Last week, I shared a video on money mindset, and this week I have a behind-the-scenes video of how I used ChatGPT and Midjourney to come up with images for my book cover for De-Extinction of the Nephilim. And I haven't shown this book cover anywhere else, so my patrons are getting a special look. And then also how I worked together with Jane, my human designer, to put the cover together. So it's a kind of end-to-end ideation of images with AI and my process and all my prompts and all the images along the way. And it's quite funny, as working with AI is funny a lot of the time. So it's a lot of giggling, and then also how we do my cover design process. So the Patreon is a monthly subscription, about the equivalent of buying me a black coffee a month, or a couple of coffees if you're feeling generous. So if you get value from the show and you want more, come on over and join more than 1,000 authors. Thanks to everyone as ever, and join us at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get into the interview. Dan Blank helps authors develop a human-centered approach to marketing through his book, Be the Gateway, a practical guide to sharing your creative work and engaging an audience, as well as his podcast, The Creative Shift, and his coaching and consultancy services at wegrowmedia.com. So welcome back to the show, Dan.
Thank you for having me back. It's always such a pleasure.
Yes. Now, you were last on the show in 2017, which it's kind of a long, long time ago now. So some people might not have heard about you. So tell us a bit more about you and your background in publishing, and also what your business looks like now.
Yeah, thank you. So I work with writers every day. This is the full-time work I've done since around 2010. And everything I focus on is really around the idea of author platform, author branding, author marketing, book launches. And for me, I've really come to embrace this idea of what I call human-centered marketing, which is to me helping writers get past some of the biggest things that stop them, which is self-censorship in terms of not knowing how to share, not knowing how to feel good about marketing, not really understanding all these core aspects of what it means to embrace the idea of being a writer, of feeling good about sharing, of knowing how to use marketing and launch tactics in a way that are very effective, but also make you feel good about the idea of sharing your work, as opposed to how a lot of writers feel about it, which is they kind of put it off and they say, well, I'm going to put my marketing hat on this specific date. Then I'm taking my marketing hat off as quickly as I can. So I've done this since 2010 full time. I work with writers every single day. Of course, I've had a blog and newsletter since before that time. I'm going on 19 years of a weekly email newsletter. I'm sure we'll talk about I'm on Substack now, and I really appreciate that venue. And like you, I've been out there for just years and years in social media and author events, just connecting with writers and readers and embracing all of the cool, weird ways that we get to share what we do.
Yeah, well, a few things there. Actually, I think you and I met on Twitter as it was back
Isn't
then,
that
right?
funny?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's funny because I, like many people, I kind of wound down my usage last year and I've actually now got back on. I'm pretending it's a completely different platform. So I am now on X at the Creative Pen, which was my old handle on the old system of Twitter. But I was thinking about this and I was actually on X and I saw this thread by an author and it did, and it said, I hate marketing. I never want to do it. It's scammy and sucky and only for people with no morals and no ethics and it's awful. And I don't want to push my book at anyone. And I was reading this going, okay, then that's really interesting. But you use the words feel good about sharing. So how can authors reframe this? Any kind of negativity they feel about this? How can we get to the point of feeling good about this?
I'm 51 years old, and what I love about being the age that I am is that I very much grew up and remember the era before the internet being everything. So I used to manage a bookstore cafe. I grew up as an artist. My wife is an incredible artist. Most of my friends over the years have been performers and creators of some sort or another. And to me, it is just a beautiful thing that people are able to write. And when I look back at the totality of my life, when I think back to a bookstore in the 1990s or a literary salon, invariably it is this idea of surrounding yourself with people who care about the themes that you write about, who appreciate writing and art and creativity. Sharing is not a negative thing. The idea of you having written and you showing up and knowing how to talk to people about this, feeling proud about it in some normal way, of feeling that you are moving within circles of people who care about creative work, who care about what you create and what other people create, and vice versa. That is something that I feel is very natural. It's a natural part of the creative process. One thing I often will say and think about is what we create is complete when it reaches another person. That if you write a book, half of it is, of course, your life experience, the craft, everything you put into that story. But if I read that book, I'm reading it from a very specific standpoint of my own needs, of my own fears, of my own life experience, of how I interpret these characters in these situations, how I see myself in the story, how a certain character reminds me of my grandfather, things that you could never imagine. And through those two things coming together is the magic of art. That's something that is almost co-created in a way. And that's inherently about that work being shared. And to me, when we look at it through a lens like this, sharing your work becomes a very natural part of creating it. Not that you are interrupting, not that you're walking into a room of people and saying, everyone stop, I've got a book and you've got some glowing sign. But the idea that you might walk into that same room and talk with people and say, well, I'm working on a new chapter for my book. And you talk about the themes and people are like, really? You've experienced this certainly a million times throughout your life. And I think that's something that a lot of people, they write privately. It is a private part of their life, separate from their role in their family, separate from their job. So it's harder for them to think about sharing it in a natural way because it starts isolated. And people define them as everything else first. But as you get comfortable in knowing how to talk about your work, in knowing how to think about who your readers are, I think it becomes more natural. And the idea of thinking of marketing not as a horrible thing that must be done to interrupt people, it becomes a much more natural part of what it means to be a writer who's living a fulfilling life as a writer.
Yeah, you have these key principles that shape your approach. And one of these is connecting to a person, not an audience, in inverted commas, like a market or whatever, you know, the big words are. But I feel like we're in this difficult tension between deep connection. And some of the things you said are great, you know, and can work, like you said, if you're in a bookstore with a person in a cafe or whatever, but they also seem unscalable. And we need to sell enough books to make marketing worthwhile, and books, there's low profit in terms of how much money most people make per book. So we do need to think marketing at scale. So where's the sweet spot? How do we keep the connection, but also the scale?
I think there's always this middle ground that we don't talk enough about. And this goes back to traditional marketing. And this is like my total obsession. So I do like talking about the very classic idea of a marketing funnel, which is sort of fuddy-duddy and old-fashioned in a lot of ways, but I find it to be really useful. That if we think about, to me, the concept of marketing funnel, if you imagine an inverted pyramid, at the top is the wide top where people become aware of your work, and somewhere in the middle, people become interested, and then they might actually take a step to buy one of your books or get on your newsletter list, and then they finally buy something, and then they actually read the book, and then they review it, they advocate, they do word of mouth marketing, they buy your next book. Think about moving through that funnel from very wide to very specific. All of these ideas are really helpful to think that if we get exposure, and let's say it's on TikTok for a certain kind of author, or it's as a speaking event, that is just the first step. The other step is the people who then come up to you after that talk and they ask a question. And then it's the idea of them taking your card or getting on your newsletter list or you giving them a free book and them getting that. It really is this series of a relationship of sorts, it's a professional relationship, but where you are slowly moving them from one sense of connection to a deeper sense of connection. It's not just exposure or just sitting in a room by yourself with a reader and talking to them. They go through these phases. And what I like is that media kind of helps us do this in a way. Before we started recording, you'd mentioned you'd heard me on another podcast, and it sounded to me like that reminded you, oh yeah, yeah, we haven't talked to Dan in a while, that me being on that very public thing kickstarted a reminder to you, and then some number of weeks or months later probably remembered, and then you emailed me and we set it up, that these things happen back and forth in a way where it's about that mass exposure, but it's about moving through the sense of awareness to interest to conversion to advocacy. And the idea of focusing on one person to me is meant to highlight that. So I've really enjoyed being on Substack for the last year with my newsletter. And in the last couple of weeks, a bunch of stuff I've shared has gone viral on Substack. It's done really well there. And I can look at the numbers and say, look at these big numbers. These numbers now are bigger than they were before. Look at this chart, how it goes at a steeper angle. And the reality, though, is that my days are spent commenting back and forth with people, people mentioning me, people giving feedback, and me spending, at this point, more than an hour a day commenting back and engaging with these people and look at what they're reading and seeing names come up again and again. These numbers have to come into some form of a sense of a progression with your readers to kind of get them from they become aware of my book, to they want to buy it, to they've bought it, to now they started reading it, to they finished it, to they reviewed it, to they're telling people about it, they're buying the next one. It's a longer progression than I think sometimes people make it out to be.
Yeah, there's a few things I want to come back on. I will come back on the Substack and the email because I know I can hear people asking that question. But I want to pick up on something you just said, which you said TikTok for a certain type of author. And I think what has changed since you and I first connected on social media is we have always had that long funnel, as in we never expected to put out a tweet or put out a podcast episode and have an immediate buy from an impulse purchase. And what has changed, and I'm seeing this direct to my Shopify store, though I use Meta ads, is that TikTok Shop, and people are buying directly from one single social video or social mention or whatever. And that really has changed. So can you just be more specific about what you mean by a certain type of author for TikTok? Because I feel like TikTok right now, as we record this in the sort of first half of 2024, is people still think it's a magic bullet, like all the other magic bullets that have come and gone. So yeah, what did you mean by that? And how can authors decide what platforms are best for them?
I mean, that's the funny thing where TikTok is and can be a magic bullet for some people at some times. So, I mean, a few months ago, I did a case study on author Brianne Randall, who had been sharing a very similar kind of video again and again on TikTok. And she went viral and she just kept using the same kind of formula for her debut novel. And I think she had 10,000 pre-orders because of that. It was very similar to what you said, where they heard her message and they pre-ordered the book. They heard her message, they pre-ordered the book. And the work for her is to get people to now read that book, to get people to like that book, to get them interested in her next book, to keep them engaged. And that, again, is when I think of the idea of marketing or what it means to be public as an author, of that's the daily work, where there was that magic bullet quality of TikTok for Brianne in that year and this year probably as well. But then what she does with it to do what you're doing, which is you're building this absolute career and business model behind it, that I think is a part of the work of understanding that. So when a writer thinks about what channel is effective for me, they're doing a couple things. Some are they're looking objectively at the business of how this works. Like, I know plenty of writers who are like, I'm going to get on Instagram. And then they ignore the data that's in front of them, which is like, well, if you want to succeed on Instagram in this general era, you really need to embrace Reels. And there's all kinds of reasons for that. But they're like, no, I don't want to do video. They think of Instagram as it was really in 2017. So they're not going to get the value out of it in that way. Or they view video in a very, very specific way. And they ignore a lot of the trends that we see on like TikTok or something about being incredibly authentic or just doing a video from your car or your bedroom or walking somewhere because they instead want to be in a studio. So some of it is looking at the data and getting that data. Some of it is your comfort level and thinking about what you're really good at and something you really enjoy. And this takes time to figure out. For me, I like writing newsletters and I like doing video. So these are the two things that I really focus a lot on. And then it is looking at where are comparable authors? Where is the community? Where are these things happening? Any kind of author can find success on any platform, but I think you and I have both probably seen, or I know I've seen, I don't want to speak for you, where we can say, wow, this certain community of writers is really active here, or we've seen again and again books in a certain topic or genre really using Instagram effectively or TikTok effectively, or with this certain topic, over on X. Yeah, there's a big following there. People are really primed to be engaging in this kind of content there. So you're mixing these three things together. And I do think experimentation comes from that, where they have to give a good first run of what feels comfortable, what feels strategic. And what a lot of people do is they pick a primary channel and then they also kind of share that content elsewhere as like a backup, where we see someone who posts on TikTok, but then they also put it on Instagram Reels, and then through Instagram Reels, it also gets put on a Facebook Reel. I saw that from an author yesterday where I saw her recent post through a Facebook Reel that was really an Instagram Reel, which is really referencing her original TikTok post. So they're thinking about how these secondary channels move into a primary channel.
Yeah, you mentioned something earlier as well around the sort of the daily work. You used the phrase the daily work. And there is a big difference between the daily work of, let's say, putting people into the top of that funnel and nurturing existing customers and fans and readers, and then comparing that to a sort of launch period where people will have a bit of a frenetic pace as such. So how would you differentiate the daily work to a launch period?
Great question. So one, I always think of this work as a craft. So it's the idea of how do we do a few things really well? How do we attend to it every week? How do we get 1% better every week or every month at these few things that we're doing? So with a launch, you're leveraging a lot of other things. So one, we've got a very specific window. So defining that window for yourself can really matter, of knowing I'm looking at the next year with the kind of pre, the during, and the post-launch, or I'm looking at the next 6 months as the launch window. that I think really helps you think about marketing in a lot of ways, because you think about what are the few things I'm going to do in that year to promote this one product, this one book, so to speak. Then we're leveraging the fact that newness is a thing. People like new things. Media likes talking about new things. Podcasters are more likely to have you on when there's a new thing. Your community around you is going to be celebratory around a new thing. So it's the idea of leveraging that. And then I always think about there's the organic stuff you're going to do. You're going to do the cover reveal. You might have a video. You might have all the kind of standard things you might do. And we kind of map that onto a calendar. Then I try to think about, because we're focusing people on this one product, this book that they haven't read yet, they might not even know they want to read. I try to think of all the ways into that. So around that one focus, I'll often think about all the different emotions as different ways in. And again, we see this a lot in social media, where there can be a way in around joy, a way in around purpose, a way in around fear and anticipation. So again, you could think of a TikTok video of someone where they're being like, oh my gosh, the book is here, and it's crying tears of joy. And then another one where they're thanking, there's gratitude, they're thanking their mentors. And then another one where they're crying and they're actually afraid. They're saying like, I don't know if this is going to work. I've put so much into this and it might not be good enough or might not be ready. And these, I think, are ways in a product launch to the idea of focusing people, giving more people attachments to this book. And then likewise, it's the idea of calling in every favor that you have. If you have a community, if you have first, second, third degree connections, when you think about where you hope this book might be talked about, whether it's a book club, a podcast, a reading group, a certain influencer on TikTok, of really trying to call in every favor and think about, what do they need? How does this book coming out align with what they love talking about, what we think their schedule is, what we can kind of make that offer? Or likewise, if you're pitching an essay somewhere, something you want to get published. So to me, it's much more focused on that window and focusing people in a lot of different ways into a very specific action, which is to know about this book, buy this book, read this book, love this book, ideally.
Yeah, and as you were talking about that author earlier on TikTok, the sort of debut novel and calling in favors and things like this. I mean, I'm obviously in a more mature phase of my author career and I write across so many genres, and I know some people listening are the same. There are books where we can call in favors, and then there are the regular releases where it's like you can't keep asking for things because you do more releases or you do a different type of genre or you do whatever you do. And so I'm thinking about a launch at the moment. I've got a book coming up, Spear of Destiny. It's book 13 in my arcane thriller series. So Yay. A book 13 is kind of like an interesting sell. Normally we would promote book one, but this is a Kickstarter for a special edition. So the launch is 21 days. And I'm really trying to come up with lots of ideas around promotional things. So if people listening are similar to me and they're trying to promote later books in a series, what are your thoughts on that? Because obviously we've got our email list, we're going to email our list, we're going to share to our normal social media things. But for these later books in fiction series, any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So something I think a lot about is like one exercise we do with writers, we create like audience personas. So what's neat is this creates a very unique persona of the longtime person who might have is very aware of your books, or they haven't started in the series, or they know about the series. It creates a different set, because what we're trying to figure out is what are their goals and their needs? What are the things that really resonate? Because some of these people, it might be a different narrative. You might be marketing it in a way which is people supporting you and what you represent. And that's helping to sell the book. A 13th book is like before I said, I've got 19 years of sending a weekly newsletter. And some of that is the idea of like, there's other narratives going on there. To someone who's never heard of me before, knowing that they missed 1,000 issues is kind of meaningless. So what does that mean? It means like, oh, well, maybe this is, you know, we're supporting this author in some way, or maybe you're having to do more work of saying, this book is a perfect way in. If you've fallen off with the series, if you whatever, here's how I'm going to catch you up with that. Or here's, like you've probably seen many times before, here's the bonus that we're doing that catches you up with this. You've got to think about, or you can think about the unique challenge and things you can leverage if that type of reader or that kind of book launch has challenges in a way of like, well, they've missed the first 12 or they've heard about this time and time again. How do we make it interesting? So we're thinking of it that way. And then we can always think about all the people who've not yet heard of your books. That's something I think about a lot, which is someone could have a million followers, and yet most of the world population has no idea who they are. They've never heard of these books. Mm-hmm. So we think about where are the places you've not been before, or what is a unique way in? If you're coming back on a podcast or coming back to someone with something, it's like, what is a unique angle? If they can't do another promotion for my book the way that I'd like them to do, what could I pitch them that is collaborative or pulls in different authors? So we see this a lot with like author events, where it's a very common thing now, but it's not just come to my author talk. It's we're doing an event and the topic is this topic, and it's me in conversation with so-and-so. Now, yes, we're coming together because I'm launching my book. That's like the Kickstarter, but you're going to see an incredible discussion on a topic that does relate to my book with me and another prominent author. So they're learning to take this idea of, oh, not everyone knows that you or doesn't know about the book, doesn't want to go to an author reading, but they want to go to an event around this topic and they want to see you and, oh, they're going to see this other person, or they know the other person, they're going to see you. And this is where I think marketing gets interesting, because it takes that problem and then we get to say, okay, cool. How do we use this to our advantage? How do we think of completely different ways of getting past people's objections using a more traditional marketing term?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I do think one of the things we can do with something like Kickstarter, which is really good, is sort of appealing to the binge buyers. So a lot of what I'm finding now, which is kind of crazy doing ads directly to my Shopify store, is that new readers will buy 12 print books cold. They'll just buy the whole series. Which I find incredible, because that's not what we've been taught around book marketing for a long time. We've been taught that funnel approach. But people every day are buying the bundle of 12. So for the Kickstarter, I'm thinking the same thing. It's like there are people who discover a new author and they want to buy the entire backlist. And that means I can offer the bundle of 13 books and in ebook, audio, paperback, etc. And that is a kind of different offering. And again, I guess that's something with marketing, is we need to think that the readers are different. So a reader who does ebooks on KU, for example, is different to an audiobook listener, is different to someone who buys special edition hardbacks and all that.
Yeah. And I think that what I love about you're talking about is, in some ways, the traditional book marketing tried to operate outside of traditional business and marketing strategy. And everything you're talking about aligns much more to leveraging that. This idea of, if people are buying bundles, it could be because they want a deal. You've made them a really good offer and they're like, and again, I didn't analyze this for you, but like, well, if I'm spending $20 on one book, but you know, $80 and I'll get 12 books, it's a better deal. Or it's about identity. It could be about their identity. Oh, I want to get into this. And when I buy the whole library, I get an instant identity. Or they want like they want their bookshelf to look a certain way, or they want to be a supporter of you. A lot of people on Patreon or Kickstarter, they want to be seen as a bigger supporter. So, oh, you could support me for $12, but my mega ultra supporters will give me $50 for the t-shirt. And there's like an identity thing going on. So I think you're able to use a lot more levers of what motivates people. And as you're really obviously very smartly doing, thinking about different ways of bundling and connecting with people in a variety of ways.
Yeah, I find the new ways of book marketing kind of a lot more freeing. I feel like we were, for fiction particularly, I know you do a lot more nonfiction, but for fiction, we were sort of hamstrung, I think, by the dominance of genre fiction in ebook. But now I think we're all realizing we can actually make really good money with print books. And now fiction authors are starting to advertise print again, which, especially with the, you know, I'm sure you know about how the audio royalties have been affected by streaming and all of that. So it feels like we've just discovered ways that traditional publishers have been using forever. And now indie authors are moving into that as well.
Well, yeah. And I think we see this like in the music world as well, where everything gets to streaming, but then the individual creator is disempowered because it's all controlled by Spotify and it's all on this mass scale. And now we have this unbelievable resurgence of people buying cassette tapes, CDs, multiple copies of vinyl, because there's different pressings of buying the sticker, but thinking of like Taylor Swift's recent launch, where it's like cassettes are a thing now, and it's empowering her, it's empowering their identity. And it's that physicality, and it all comes in a different way. So I absolutely love that example.
That is so funny about cassettes. I was walking past the street market here in Bath, and there are these old stalls covered in vinyl and tapes. And all the people shopping at this stall were young, like teenagers, early 20s. And it was so weird. I was like, where are they even playing this stuff? Or are they just not playing it? I mean, where do you even play a tape deck now?
Isn't it incredible? I've got a tape right here. Like, you can hear like the old tape stuff. But yeah, it's neat. And I think people are rediscovering it. It's some of its nostalgia. And some of it, I think, is for people who are younger. Like, I've got younger kids. It's this brand new thing. I can hold music in my hand for the first time in their whole lives, which is incredible.
But do you, I mean, we're a similar age, right? I mean, we used to buy tapes and then the machine would chew up the tape. I don't think they realize.
There goes your $20.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think these people realize that these things get chewed up and then you can't play it anymore. So you have to keep it as an artifact, because playing it may damage it, which I think is maybe that's part of the attraction, I suppose.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Okay, well, let's come back to Substack. Can you just start on the platform approach? Because obviously when we started online, when you started your email list, you were not on Substack because it didn't exist. So what have you found particularly good about the platform? What did you switch from? Any sort of recommendations on platform?
Sure. So to me, what Substack has solved is what every other email newsletter platform never really approached, never tried to solve, which is fine. All of these platforms are incredible at giving you the technology to create and deploy newsletters. They will send them out, they'll get them delivered. There's good creation tools. They'll manage your list for you. Getting subscribers is where everyone suffers. The idea of then they've got to go and build their platform from scratch. And that's obviously part of the work I help people do. So something that Substack has done is they have good email creation tools like everyone else. But they've really created a network, a community where your newsletter can be discovered. And that's something I was seeing a couple of years ago. I worked with tons of clients on, and then I moved mine over actually almost exactly a year ago when we're recording this. I'm going to do a big post about that. And what the interesting thing for me was seeing how, one, newsletters were growing at a much quicker rate on Substack than I ever saw or ever heard from clients on any other platform. And then two, there was a lot more engagement in Substack than I've seen since the early days of blogging. So it is incredible for me. I'm actually going to my most recent post. I had a really big post last Friday where the comments section, remember when comments were a big deal on blogs?
Mm, yeah.
I have 162 comments on my recent post in Substack. And I used to have something like that years ago where you'd post, there'd be all these comments, it'd feel like a community, people would comment on each other, people would discover each other's stuff through the comments. That all got dispersed to social media in the last 10, 15 years. And that was fine because social media is unique and cool in its own way. But seeing people connect with more writers to appreciate long form content, to come together in something that feels smaller and more community driven, it's not unique in general. We have that on Discord or Patreon or these other smaller areas. But what's really nice is that it felt like this is a platform really celebrating the idea of writing and reading as opposed to very short videos. And I love very short videos, but it's a different skill set for a writer to say, I'm going to get really good at TikTok videos, than it is to say, I'm going to write a 1500 word piece and send it out. So I've seen that discoverability and that really celebrating the idea of writing and reading and connecting with each other. That just totally blew me away.
Yeah. So basically you're committing to writing long form content every week. I mean, like you say, it is like blogging. But what's so interesting is I've really switched to being an audio first consumer. So I don't read articles at all anymore. I read books and I listen to podcasts and I listen to audiobooks. But I do get a lot of emails on Substack. But as a reader, I much prefer audio. Like, I want to have it as audio. But that's me. That's my preference. So I think this is the thing, isn't it? Certain people want to read your Substack and certain people want to consume in other ways. So are you trying to reach everyone on every platform? Or are you just focusing there?
So it's interesting because what I've seen Substack do is now it's kind of like a newsletter. It started out, then it's got essentially a blog because it's got the online publication. now they have audio for all their posts. So you can do voiceover for all your posts, and plenty of people do that. They now have video posts and automated transcripts. So they're definitely, and they have their own social network that's very much like Twitter. So they are, I think, trying to leverage that. And what is nice is it gives you as the user of it, the opportunity to say, oh, I want to make sure that everything I share has audio because that's part of how I like it or how my consumer likes it. For me, I think that last year when everything changed with Twitter/X, what I saw was a really big shift in social media in general. That to me was generally always the center of how we thought, how we viewed social media, even if someone wasn't super active on it. When that broke, what I saw was it breaking people's own expectations of where they show up and where they find people and their own preferences. So I saw a lot of people split off for a while anyway of saying, well, I might not be there as much, so I'm going to go to Blue Sky or Instagram or Threads. And it was tough because people got there and they saw some of their friends there, but not all their friends there. Mm. And that really had them reassess things. So one thing that I look at for myself and for other people too is saying, well, where do I really want to show up? Where am I comfortable and where are my people? So for me, again, because I've always had the newsletter, from a business standpoint, I like it because I've had enough writers that I've known say, oh, I was doing great on Instagram for a while. I built up 40,000 followers, but then I don't know what happened. My account got flagged and da-da-da-da-da. And no matter what I did, I couldn't get back. Or they say the algorithm has changed and now I've got to do these videos. Even when I do the videos, they don't work like it used to, and they feel kind of bad about that. I do like the fact that for a newsletter, I regularly download and back up my list, and that if Substack goes away tomorrow, I can take that list and move it to any other platform. I have a way of reaching people. That feels like a good center for me. Obviously, I still love social media and all these different platforms, but I like the idea of finding a center where you feel you're comfortable, where your readers are comfortable, where it works your business strategy. And then also diversifying. And we see this even for a YouTuber, someone where their whole income is YouTube. They'll now have multiple channels. They will actively say, join my Discord for conversation. They know that their account can get flagged for the wrong reason, and they need a way to communicate with people. So they've, again, gotten much smarter from a business standpoint of making sure their business doesn't fall off if one thing happens on one network.
Mm. Which is what we talk about a lot with Amazon as well. Yeah, last year, I call it the splintering. We've got this splintering of these communities that were in one place and now are kind of everywhere. You can't reach everyone, so you have to focus. But I do want to come back to, again, you talked about the daily work earlier, and you said you spend about an hour a day answering these comments and that engagement side of posting content. Now, as authors, and I'm on like number 47 or something now, I want to write books. I want to use my words for writing books. And that's what I like to do. So although I welcome comments on this episode from people listening, and also I get emails every day from people, but I don't want to spend an hour a day engaging on what is essentially social media. So how do people balance that, this kind of engagement connection versus doing the work of writing books?
Yeah, some of that I think is just really getting clear about one's, I don't know if this is the right word, but their values in a way. Not that there's one value better than another. Knowing how you want to spend your time. So a lot of authors I talk to, full-time authors, they spend a big chunk of their day creating. And it's often the first half of the day, not always. There has to be a limit, a creative limit of how many hours they can spend writing. Of course, we know a lot of famous examples. No, they write from 8 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. every day. Most people I found, they've got 3 to 5 hours max of like pure creative work. And then because they want to change gears or because they want to actually have a business around their creative work, they know that they've got to spend another 3 hours in the afternoon or something managing the virtual assistant, managing email, setting up a promotion, thinking about a book launch. And that's a part of it. And people get to define that. Someone can offload that to other people, obviously, and have a team of people. So whenever I look at someone who's really successful, I love looking them up and realizing, oh, they've got a team of 4 people. They've got a team of 2 people. They've got a team of 30 people. And then it's the idea of what do you enjoy or what is this for you? Some people really like engagement, or they really like going to events, or they really like speaking. That's for you, everyone individually, to decide in a lot of ways. For me, because I grew up as a creator, I was always involved in creative communities. And like the whole idea for me is this, what I like about the internet is that it's this beautiful thing where someone can be anywhere in the world for the most part and feel they want to create something that their family doesn't understand, their friends don't understand, their community doesn't understand. They can create it and they can distribute it now that they couldn't have done 20 or 30 or longer years ago. That to me is magical. And the idea that to me, a work is complete when it's received by someone, that's not a rule. It's just how I tend to view it for myself. I truly get goosebumps, like, you know, hearing people comment back on stuff and doing that. It just feels so special that something I wrote inspired them or they offered something additional to that. I'm not long form doing these long comments back to people, but for me to just see other people, to just recognize that if someone took the time to comment, I'm going to take a moment to comment back. Beyond that, to me, it's just productivity. It's just how I schedule that time when I do it. I'm very careful about that, about, oh, at 4 o'clock, I'll go in and I'll spend 30 minutes going through all the comments here. I'll process email at this certain time. Beyond that, it's just working into the rest of my life because like you, everyone is really busy and you've got to find that balance. And then I think the rest of it is also forgiving yourself and letting go of things that you can't always do. You get to start with the values, but at a certain point you might say, I'm calling email bankruptcy or I'm just not doing that. And you've got to also feel good about that as well because we have to have good physical and mental health in addition to all these quote unquote obligations we feel that we have.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And of course, you were talking there at the beginning about people who are full-time creators. But when I had a day job, I would write in the morning before work, so like 5 a.m. And then in the evening, I would do the connection, the social media, the marketing. So it's like whatever time you have, you need to split it into two. The creation side and then the business and marketing side, right? For however much time you have, it should be split like that.
Yeah, or you have to get an assistant or a partner, whatever, who might handle aspects to it that you don't want to handle. That's the other end of it.
On that then, because again, I've had a lot of people lately, because the self-publishing industry has definitely changed from when you and I met again. And people are saying, oh, it's a lot of work. Can I get someone to do the work for me? Can I get someone else to do the work of publishing and someone else to do the work of marketing? And so I find myself replying more often than not now, maybe look for a traditional publisher. because if you want someone to do the publishing and the marketing, then maybe that's what you want. But I did want to ask, I mean, it's funny, right? But I did want to ask around marketing, because people do seem to think still that if they get a publishing deal, they don't have to do any marketing. But what have you seen? Because you work with a lot of traditionally published authors. How much can people give that to a publisher, or are they expected to do just as much as indie authors?
Yeah. I mean, I work with people on every publishing path, every kind of writing. And so I will have some clients who are multi-published, traditional publishers, and they still hire me because they know they have to do the work. Publishers are amazing, and hybrid publishers are amazing too. And there are some things that they will do. In general, it's often different than what you might think. And it's different for every publisher and every publishing team and every book, where the author's expectation might be they're going to handle it. And their expectation might be, well, we're going to come in kind of closer to launch than you think, and we're going to do these couple things really well. And then we're going to stop at a certain point because we have another list of books to publish. Whereas the author, I don't want to say is expected, like it's this role being thrust upon you. To me, it's an opportunity. You're the only one who cares more about this. Because I'll talk to writers who are like, well, can I just hire someone to do all my social? And it's like, oh yeah, you can. We can talk about an assistant and the process and examples of that. But just know, if you really care about Substack or Instagram or whatever, and you offload that whole process, they're never going to do it as well as you can. Like, you're not going to get the benefit that you see these other authors doing, who are showing up and really not just doing the work, but learning about the work, of caring about that work. So it's this idea of, I think you have to have much more real, people have to have very realistic expectations of what can a publisher do and what can you do? And likewise, this is the beauty and sometimes the overwhelming beauty of, we have so many authors who are talking about their experiences now on podcasts or case studies. And I've heard this many times where they might have had a good experience with a publicist, but they'd say, yeah, but also like some of the really good in podcasts I was a guest on, I'm the one who pitched. My publicist was good. They got me some stuff, but this whole other range of stuff I got because I found that podcast, I pitched them and I got on the show. And that is a beauty of the world that we live in. And it's also an opportunity in some ways. And people can pass that up, which is totally fine. But it is there. You're going to do a lot more consistently and a lot better than other people can do for you. And again, that's something you can get really good at or not. And I always think there's a real joy in finding a connection to the reader, a connection to the market. Otherwise, you might feel very jaded by it because you've always kept it at arm's length.
Yeah, and keeping that joy and finding that joy in every book launch, I think it's the only way to keep a long-term career going. And yeah, it's funny, I guess I count myself now in having a long-term career. I've gone past 15 years now, which is kind of crazy.
Amazing.
I know. All right. So where can people find you and everything you do online?
Sure. So my main website is wegrowmedia.com. All my stuff is there. How to work with me, all the case studies, everything. My Substack is danblank.substack.com. The podcast is The Creative Shift. Just Google that. The Substack is the same name. And then on social media, I'm just at Dan Blank everywhere.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for your time, Dan. That was great.
Thank you so much.
So I hope you found the discussion with Dan interesting and that it might help you reframe marketing as something more sustainable and an enjoyable part of your author business. You can leave a comment on the podcast show notes at thecreativepen.com or on the YouTube channel, or message me on X at thecreativepen, or email me joanna@thecreativepen.com. Next week, I'm talking to Shell Honecker about using tools to automate your author business so you can spend more time on writing and doing the things you love. In the meantime, happy writing, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.